exactly in the realm of where we have been talking these last weeks and continuing today, going into Psalm 23. And, Rebecca has been working with us through Sheridan Parkside. She's really kind of one of the main components of our Tuesday afternoon reading program. But, Rebecca has shown a lot over these years, and I don't want to just keep on talking about Rebecca because it really kind of ties into our opening for the Lord is my shepherd psalm. And that is that, we go through things that are dark and overwhelming and difficult, and there's always going to be that concern that we've been talking too much about the difficulties and concerns, but we have to understand that David coming into Psalm 23 is not focusing and hunkered down on the fact that it's a dark valley. All the more so, he's really focusing in on the greatness of our Shepherd King. And I'll be very just open and honest with you. The last 2 weeks have been as close to being overwhelming for me as I have experienced. Particularly as it pertains to Sheridan Parkside and things all of a sudden kind of all coming together and contractors at each other's throats and all this kind of stuff in the midst of knowing that I have to continue to be a supportive husband and father and a pastor. There's that going on too. So we have all these things it seemed that can mount up. And I remember at one point, I think it was a week ago Friday, I said, I finally just came home after just dealing with it for all day on Friday. And I just came home and the cars weren't working, both of them at that time. And we just had one thing on top of another. And I just looked at Catherine and said, you know what? I can't even think about the van right now. I am so overwhelmed just right now. And so I just have to rest. And so I did. I went, put my head down, and I just said, God, this is either your calling and it's in your hands or whatever. And I'll tell you, at that point, we had a long weekend with the youth. XD weekend was just a few hours after that. And I allowed God just to work through that and to build me back up. We were also talking Psalms and XD weekend and had some fun. And I was actually really quite ill, not with the flu or anything, but other things that are going on with my body at that time. Who knows what's connected with what? Talk about overwhelming, right? I could barely walk. I came into XD weekend. I'm just telling everybody, it's like, man, I can hardly even stand up right now. I just want to just tell you that, you might have to do with a little less of me than is typical for an XD weekend. And so, what happened? God saw us through that. The next 24 hours, as we just relaxed and rested in Him, as I dwelt upon the fact that the Lord is my shepherd, I'm not saying all the troubles went away. The contractors are still at each other's throats. They still want their money. All these things going on, So it's not that the problems just disappear. But when we can rest in the hands and in the arms of our loving shepherd, what a wonderful testimony that is. And I will tell you this, that in the midst of all that, even though the circumstances seemed very overwhelming to me, ultimately, there was no fear involved. That's what we're really talking about today, thriving in the face of fear. Because fear, the things that are fearsome, are going to be staring us in the face. A van that one of my good auto buddies said, I'm pretty sure this thing might be done. I'm like, oh, that's great. That's great news in the midst of everything else that's going on. And then the car, it's just not really working very well and this and that. And then all of a sudden, it's like, Lord, that's yours too. This health issue, that's yours. You can see me through this. And it never got to a point of panic. I got to the point of needing to rest my brain from all this stuff. That's not fear, though. Okay, we can get to that point where we feel overwhelmed, and as long as we turn to the shepherd of our soul and say, The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not be in want. I lack nothing. Then we can avoid running down this pathway of fear. And then we can continue to thrive as the people of God. So turn to Psalm 23. And let's read this together. Well, I'll read it because I'm reading it from maybe a different version that you have. Let's read this. Follow along as you can. Psalm 23. I'm reading from the Christian Standard Version. The Lord is my shepherd. I have what I need. He lets me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the quiet waters. He renews my life. He leads me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even when I go through the darkest valley, I fear no danger. For you are with me, your rod, your staff. They comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Only goodness and faithful love will pursue me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord as long as I live. You know, it really has to do, my context in this last couple of weeks has been, obviously it has some burden with the Sheridan Parkside ministry getting up and going. You have other contexts that I have already described for you. But, you know, the context in which David is speaking this psalm, you have to understand, as a shepherd's mind, he's also a shepherd king, right? It was not unusual in the Middle East and the Far East to consider kings to be as shepherds. In fact, they often talk to themselves as being shepherds of their people. So this is not really like necessarily biblical lingo, but it is that the context in which they were, okay? And here's a picture. I'm not sure how well you can see that. Here's a picture of the kind of area that David would have been familiar with as far as sheep herding. Down here in the front here, you can see how dry. That is actually aloe plants just growing. So those are succulent things that grow in great arid areas, okay? And up behind there, you can see grasses growing on the left-hand side, but rocky, mountainous terrain on the right-hand side. If there was any picture that I could come up with, and this was something we took someplace along the way last year, if there was anything that I could talk about the context of Judah and the Judean landscape that David was thinking through when he's talking about shepherding, this Judean shepherd king is going to be thinking about this kind of terrain. Your context has a lot to do with where your fears are going to come from. David speaks of things from a shepherd's perspective in Judea that other people may not have any understanding of in, say, shepherding in Ireland. Ireland has these wide, vast, beautiful, green places that sheep just love, and they just wander any place they want. Not so in Judah. The best place to be a shepherd in Judah was one of the only places that they did not control. They had this coastal plain up there against the Mediterranean Sea. And as you go there today, you can see it's this beautiful, beautiful, lush area. And it comes off of the Mediterranean Sea and up, and it's just beautifully flat. What a wonderful place to grow crops and to raise sheep. It would be so, so beautiful. They didn't own that. The Philistines were there in David's day. You come in a little bit further, and you have, further a little bit to the west, and you come off the coast, and you have these nice, lush plains and starting to come into the lowlands, the rolling hills. And they really didn't do very much there either because there were enemies that kind of secured those areas. So the places that David knew as a young man before he, as a king, conquered things, the things that he knew were pretty much to the west of that. And now you're starting to get into rocky, hilly, mountainous areas. The context of your fears are just as real as David's. What you have come through this past week, what I have come through this past week, has got to cause us to stop and think. Can my God, my shepherd, lead me through not the best of times, not the nice plush lowlands, but in my rockiness and in the difficulties and the terrain that is apparent and pertaining to my heart and my life situation, can he shepherd me there? And David says a resounding yes, absolutely. My God, my shepherd, satisfies every longing in my heart. So I want to take us down through three remembrances today again. And then later on, we're going to talk about three disciplines to add into our lives. If you're following along with your notes, you'll see it has spelled out there, different verses. And as we walk through this, I want to kind of challenge us to remember and consider. In my wilderness, I always have a choice in the way that I'm going to allow the shepherd to shepherd me through my circumstances. I always have a choice whether I'm going to be Christ conscious, whether I'm going to hold on to my Christ calling, whether I'm going to be Christ controlled, spirit controlled, or whether I'm going to fritter and fear my way through life. Whenever I come to a place in the wilderness, I have an option of whether I'm going to remember the great things of our God, or whether I will choose to forsake them and forget them and turn myself instead to a very self-centered and self-controlled in that regard. Allow my circumstances to control me. That's a choice that we as believers, we have to make. And so in making these decisions, I believe it comes down to remembering who God is and then disciplining our lives accordingly. You'll see today that the remembrances and the disciplines will match themselves together. And the first thing I want you to see as far as what David says, as far as remembrance, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not be in need. I have what I need. This young man, this picture, this little boy, it's the picture I have of what it looks like to be completely satisfied with the moment, right? Satisfied with everything that is going on. He is just taken in. And listen to David's voice here. The Lord, my shepherd, I shall not want. That's the traditional way of looking at it, but the way it kind of spells it out in the Hebrew is, I have everything that I could possibly need. Now, it doesn't mean that I have all the things that I could possibly want. There are desires, evil and right, in my heart. And I wish I could have a car that works. Let's say that, okay? Which I do, by the way. My cars have, praise God. God has restored both of them with very, very little effort. So, again, that God has supplied our need. It's difficult to be in my life without having two vehicles, much less have just one vehicle, okay? So God supplied what we needed. And so that satisfaction, I shall not be in need. The satisfaction of my soul is in what? Not in material wealth. Not in getting my way, but rather settling into realizing that I have in Jesus Christ, I have everything I could possibly want and need spiritually. And when my mind and my heart is in that condition, I am so far less likely to walk into sin. I am so far less likely to walk into places of darkness of my own soul, right? Because honestly, and I've said this before, that when we choose to sin, we are choosing to forget how satisfying Christ is. That's a simple way of looking at it, right? When I walk into covetousness, longing after what other people have, I have forsaken the fact of, in reality, that Jesus is my satisfaction. He has given me what I need for the money. He's given me my manna. He gave that book out last week. I'm not sure if any of you have delved into it, but they're gone. So I guess they're out there someplace. I put one last one out in the back table for those who can swoop it up. That's a great talk about how tomorrow morning I have faith in the fact that my God will provide the manna needed for tomorrow. If I gather up too much today, it's just going to go to waste and it's going to spoil in my cupboard. But when I wait upon the Lord and I realize that the manna comes as my needs are there, and boy, oh boy, I come out there anticipating that the great God has shown up, and there he is. He brings the manna. He brings the right voice into my life that says, you know what, you need to do this about your car. Just give this a try. I'm not sure if this is going to work, but it works. That's manna. He brings the right conditions in our lives to give us a little more date time or time alone with each other so that we can build on our marriage, Catherine and I. We have the right kind of manna as far as health care to help her. Catherine's gone through some oral surgery this past week as well. And so, I mean, but there's manna there, right? We need this done, so we there it is. God gives that to us. And so what happens when he gives us a little bit of surplus? It's not there for me to hoard and to hold on to, but to pour out of myself. And in my satisfaction in Jesus Christ, I can be generous and I can overflow with the good things of the Lord. See how the spiritual life works? As God satisfies, as we drive towards that satisfaction, he offers us sometimes to be stewards of greater than what we have. The Lord is my shepherd. I have what I need. He lets me lie down in quiet waters, or beside quiet waters. He renews my life. He leads me along the right paths for his name's sake. In verse 2 and 3, we see that we have to remember from whom our life and our righteousness comes. The sheep understands, to some extent anyways, enough to follow the shepherd, that if I follow this man, he seems to know where the right pastures are. He seems to know where the right water is, the quiet streams, which are not easily found, by the way, in Judah. Even the grasses are difficult to find. It's very, very seasonal, right? So you have just sporadic seasonal, I should say, they're not sporadic, there's seasonal rains that come, and then the shepherd has to know where the little wadis that are going to fill up, you know, which ones are going to be rushing, and which ones are going to be quiet. Rushing water is not good for a sheep to be nearby. Can you picture why? Sheep goes and he starts to waddle his way into a little fast-moving brook, and the bottom part of his belly is all full of really thick wool. And all of a sudden, his belly is starting to not only get filled up with water, but his fur, his wool, starts to weigh him down. And he starts slipping, and he can't control himself as much. That fast water is starting to look a little more dangerous now, right? And if the shepherd is not concerned about the quiet waters, the sheep will, one at a time, just kind of keep on slumping down into that water. And before long, you'll have a bunch of drowned sheep. Whether they're flowing down the river or not is another story, but you're going to have a lot of sheep that can't keep their head above water. And so we have to be careful, you know, to realize that our shepherd is the one who brings us into the pastures. He's the one that's going to bring us to the quiet waters. He's the one that's going to be able to restore my life. And when I do fall into those difficult streams, he's there to pull me back out with all of his might sometimes. Those sheep can get pretty big. And those that, and even heavier when they're wet, and he just hoists them back in, and he restores my life. Because I like sometimes to stick my head into the wrong kind of water. I like to stick my foot into the wrong kind of a path, one that's full of crags and rocks and places I should not be going. So the shepherd, I know we like to think of ourselves as nice little lambs, but, you know, we're not all little lambs, right? Little lambs were up here, now they're gone. We're big sheep that need, sometimes we're stubborn, and sometimes we don't listen very well as to where we're supposed to be going. And so we have rushing waters that are dangerous, and we have crags and rocks that are dangerous, and the Lord, our God, is the shepherd who tries to bring us back and restore us to a place. I know that we have learned this this psalm traditionally, and we think it through, and we know some of it by heart, but sometimes the traditional remembrance of this psalm does not really tell us exactly. We say he leads us on the paths of righteousness. Well, that really is talking about right paths. Because from a sheep doesn't know righteousness, right? I mean, he's talking as a shepherd about sheep. And I know we try to spiritualize things, but David is giving us an indication. So how do we make that sound right to a sheep? Well, there's the right path and there's the wrong path. And the right path is the one that the shepherd brings us along. Okay? And I understand there's the concept of righteousness in this. But the words really talk about, he leads me on the right path. That's the safe path. That's the place that's going to bring us to the quiet waters, into the gentle pastures. Okay? And so, whereas we have this God who is able to satisfy me, he is also the one who is looking out for my best interest. And he is there to come alongside of us and to lead us in the right path, to keep us safe for his name's sake. Now, what is David thinking about in this? He knows that for every sheep that he would lose, that's a tarnishing against his own name as a shepherd, right? Well, there's that shepherd down there. He's pretty good. He keeps about 6 of every 10 sheep. They're pretty safe. The other ones, we don't know what happens to the other 4, but, you know, he's pretty good. No, the shepherd, that's a good shepherd, is taking care of all. And we see this actually in John 10, don't we? Where Jesus says, I'm the good shepherd, and if there's one that's missing, what does he do? He goes out and seeks it, right? That's from one of the parables later on. But he calls himself the good shepherd in the same way that David is calling God his shepherd. And so he leads us along the right paths for his namesake, because his name is tied to whether I survive or not. You guys remember back in the Old Testament where Moses is watching a bunch of grumbling sheep, right? Grumble, grumble, grumble. No water, no this, no that. And God's like, you know what? I'm done. I am sick and tired of all the grumbling. I am going to destroy them all, and I'm going to start again with you, Moses. What does Moses say? What will they say about you, Lord? For your name's sake, for your reputation, do not allow your sheep, your people, your congregation, do not let them perish because it's your name. You know, God's really pretty big about his name, right? And Moses had the right mindset. any other person perhaps would have said, you know, that sounds pretty good. You know, the Abraham thing has kind of worn its way out. Now, I think the Moses, the new family of Moses, that sounds like a good idea. Let's do that. But Moses, not looking after himself, not looking at his own ways, he says, Lord, for your name's sake, keep your sheep well. And so God spares them. So remembrance number one is that he satisfies your need. Number two, that he is the founder and the restorer of your life and your righteousness, your right path. And number three, remember who has your back. He says, even when I go through the darkest valley, I fear no danger. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. So this last remembrance has to do with this rod again. And those kids got it pretty right. This is there to kind of nudge us along, to chasten us, to keep us on that right path. But just as importantly, that's not really what David is focusing on here. It says, even though I go through the darkest valleys, and another way of saying that is the shadowiest of shadows. Well, we kind of added to it again in this case. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Again, it's a little bit of a translation issue as far as what is actually being said in the Hebrew. But David's words are specifically, even though I walk through the shadowiest of shadows, or the darkest of shadows, those dark valleys. And of course, we've put pictures to this, and we've continued to develop this thought. What does that look like? Well, even though I go through these places, and you're going to have to go there. Why? Because the pasture on this side of the mountain is done, and you're going to have to get to the other place. And the shepherd knows where the quiet waters are, and where the right path is, and where the good pasture is. Only a shepherd knows that. He's the one that remembers it season after season, which ones are coming. He's the one that hears the news from the other shepherds. Hey, you know, it's looking good over in this other area. The sheep are pretty much oblivious. They're not really good at keeping seasonal track of things. And besides that, what was good last year is not necessarily always going to be good this year. And so what is he going to do? He's going to have to bring him through the darkest, shadowiest of shadows in order to get to the other side. And even though I may wander and walk through this shadowy area, I will fear no danger. And so now we're looking at, you know, what is the purpose for not having fear? Number one, he has satisfied me to this point, thus far in my life. He has been my satisfaction. He has given me the joy of my life. And number two, he has proven himself faithful to not only give me the life, but to restore my life and to keep me on this right path. And so he gives me good reason not to fear, even though what looks ahead is pretty scary stuff. When we have to look ahead at the future and we say, there's no way I can get from here to there without going through that shadowy place, I can still fear no danger. I can still be fearless in that. I can be confident in one thing alone, not in my own ability to get there, because I will wander, I'll follow the wrong path, I will wander into deep, stirring waters. I'll find all kinds of trouble along the way, but that's not my confidence anyways. My confidence is in that my shepherd knows the way, knows where to take me, and will get me through. And his rod is able to defend me against the wild beasts that stand and prowl about wanting to take me out. Now the sheep, again, is pretty ignorant of such things. They'll wander through anything pretty much. And they won't be fearful until all of a sudden the wolf shows up right in front of them and is ready to take a couple of them out, right? We oftentimes are not that slick. We do not see the danger before it's there, but the shepherd does. And so my confidence is not in my far-reaching mindset that I can see so far in advance. No, I can't count on that. Because the circumstances and the seasons and the situations of the terrain, the context of it, it's changing all the time. And sometimes somebody dams up a place that I thought was going to be really, really good water. It's no longer there. And sometimes the water's just not falling on that side of the mountain the same way. But in my wisdom, I'm going to go there because that's traditionally where I go every single time. And the shepherd's like trying to nudge me along. The right path is over here. And so I either listen to that confidently saying, yes, I can go through this situation as dire and difficult and really frustrating as that looks like it's going to be, and I can still not fear. Well, that seems just overwhelming. The overwhelming nature of that is not to be scoffed at. But God will always take us to places that we're going to be beyond ourselves, beyond our own minds, beyond our own abilities, beyond your own skills. If you have not been walking with God in a place where you are beyond yourself, you have not really tasted the great adventure yet. The great adventure is not doing as much as I am able to, I'm capable of. The great adventure is leaping into the hands of the shepherd and allowing it to take you places you never thought you would be. And I can do that with confidence and fearlessness, undaunted courage, because not because of how much I know, but how much I know the shepherd knows. Let's take us into a time of remembrance. You have cards and pens there. We're not going to really stop too long, but I would ask that as we continue on here today, that you take a moment to remember, how has your shepherd been faithful to you in the past week? There's cards and pens down at either side of your aisles. You can pass those along. How has the shepherd been faithful to you in this past week, in this past month, in this past year, in this past life? Rebecca has done a job at remembering that and placing it down in a book. We don't all have that opportunity. Or we don't take that opportunity, perhaps. But I'm giving you an opportunity here just to write down a couple simple things. Things at the end of the service, you're going to have the opportunity to lay here at the altar, at this table, and just say, Lord, thank you. I remember your faithfulness. I remember what you have been to me, how you've satisfied me, how you've had my back at every time. When I didn't even know you were there protecting and guiding me. And you have restored life to me. Take a moment to remember your faithful shepherd. So these remembrances, as I told you, are going to match up very nicely with the disciplines that I would also ask for us to consider. And the first thing is, after remembering that he is your satisfaction, the discipline is, be satisfied. Drive my heart and my mind into a place that says, you know what? The shepherd is good. And he's got good intention for me. He is for me, not against me. Be satisfied in him. Matthew 6:33 says, very famous, many of you know it, you can quote it with me. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, his right path, and all these things, all your food and your clothing and your shelter, all these things will be added to you, right? Seek first the kingdom, be satisfied in the kingdom. David says it a little differently. He says, delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. He will satisfy you. That's a wonderful topic to talk about, right? At one time, turned some heads when I started off in another church many years ago. I talked about how God will give you anything you want with this understanding that you first delight yourself in the Lord. And if everything that you do is delighting to the Lord, then God will satisfy that. And see, our problem is not that God is just not wanting to give us things. It's that our hearts are not wanting the right things. Delight yourself in the Lord. Seek first the kingdom of God. Be satisfied in him. And man, you will be satisfied. He's not going to say, be satisfied in me, and then I'm going to kind of just hold back a little bit. No. I have come that you may have life, that you may have it to its fullest. He wants to satisfy you in your spiritual endeavors. And when we take on, we say, you know what? As I match these things up, God, this is your desire, then that's my desire. God, this is your desire, then that's my desire. God, this is your desire. Well, I'm not sure I'm quite there, but I'm going to bring it to a discipline where I can desire the same thing as God in that. And when I'm there, then I'm satisfied. You understand what I'm saying? The satisfaction in Christ is really a mindset and a heart set where we have to get ourselves focused in on who and what Christ wants, who he is and what he wants for my life. And when that matches up with where my heart is, I will be fully satisfied. So discipline number one is allow yourself to be satisfied in the God of your salvation. The second thing is that we have to battle against our fleshly desires and self-righteousness. If we want to lie down in green pastures and we want to be led along quiet waters, and you want your life renewed, and you want your life to be a glorification to the very name of Jesus Christ, then there's some battling that must go on. And Romans talks a lot about this battle between flesh and spirit. It doesn't just come overnight. It doesn't just come because I woke up today and I just said, you know what, I'm going to go to battle. No, battle is a discipline all in itself. So if you want to turn to Romans chapter 8 real quickly, I'll begin reading in verse 8. Those who are in the flesh cannot please God. You, however, are not in the flesh, but in the Spirit, if indeed the Spirit of God lives in you. If anyone does not have the Spirit of Christ, he does not belong to him. Now, if Christ is in you, the body is dead because of sin, but the Spirit gives life because of righteousness. And if the Spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead lives in you, then he who raised Christ from the dead will also bring your mortal bodies to life through the Spirit who lives in you. There is a battle. And if you notice this helmet here, it would be pretty difficult to see to your left or to your right. It's a pretty focused, non-peripheral view out of that helmet. When we go to battle, it is important for us to be focused on the path that is right before us, the path of righteousness. When we look to the left and to the right, that's the ways of the lust of the flesh. That's the ways of the lust of the eyes. And that's the way of the pride of life. If we want to go to battle and we want to overcome flesh by spirit, we must come to that realization that my focus must be that I must cut out the flesh, that is, the sinful ways, and I must allow the Spirit to come in and override me. So a discipline is that the battle is real. Talked about that a little last week. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against the principalities of darkness. But sometimes those principalities of darkness are doing war in my own soul, and I have to overcome that which is darkness with that which is light. And I must walk according to the Spirit and allow myself to be a spirit man. That's my only way to come through the valley of shadowy shadows and come out alive in Christ. And finally, I wanted to say, after we're satisfied, after we battle against the flesh, it's time for us to be believing in the direction and security of our good shepherd. If he's going to take you into a shadowy place, let him. If he's going to have you climb up to the top of a mountain because he knows that there's pasture there and there's goodness for you, let him. Allow him to guide you rightly, because he's the only one that can do that. My own flesh, my own wisdom, my own will has got to be subservient to his. Now, just to take us to the end of this, some of us like the end better than we like the other part, but I want you to understand that David changes course here, and this is the reason why we spent all of our time on the first verses, not into that second part. We are no longer going to be looking through the eyes of sheep here in a second. When we pass beyond verse 4, we are now talking in people language. Okay? So we come into a spiritual place. David wants to take us to. As humans, we're thinking, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Only goodness and faithful love will pursue me all the days of our lives, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord as long as I live. And I know that we have seen many people over the years to try to take this and show more and more how this has to pertain to sheep life, okay? But I'm going to tell you this. I think it's a little bit of a stretch. I think what David's trying to do here is, okay, so I'm done, and many of our versions actually make a cutoff point there. Not a selah, or it's a breast, but an actual cut. And he stops with the sheep language, and he starts to say, listen, your God is the host of your now and your forever. And he is, you know, when you get to the end of this, we're not talking about some kind of like heavenly realm. I mean, certainly we can take it that way, but David's not in that mindset. David's mind is about how he is, because he says, I will dwell in the house of the Lord as long as I shall live. He had a different understanding of afterlife than what we do today. The Old Testament people, to live was good. There was no Paul saying, when you die, you get to be forever with God or anything like that. This was the understanding that it is good. This is why David is constantly saying, don't let me die, God. Whatever you do, you know, what good is my life to you if I pass from this into the eternity? No. He says, let me live, because this proves your faithfulness, your goodness. The people who have long life and have that kind of prosperity in this life, that is good. And so we can kind of spiritualize the 23rd Psalm in a different way than what David intended on it. But listen, think about this not as some afterlife presentation, but listen what he's saying about what he believes of his life right there where he was alive and well, and perhaps we should as well. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Where's his enemies? His enemies aren't in heaven, right? His enemies are right here in front of us, right? Right in our everyday life. That's our enemies. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil and my cup overflows. He's already experienced that partially as being anointed king, but now he's thinking about it beyond that. Only goodness and faithful love, that hesed love, will pursue me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord as long as I live. To presume that we're in this life just so we can get to the point of death and then just jump over, and you forget and you're missing a big point. God is desiring for us to thrive as people here on this earth. As long as he has us here, he wants us to thrive and to be satisfied and to be joy-filled in him and to be the people who represent his namesake in a mighty and incredible way. To testify about the greatness of how he has overcome my fear. He has overcome my fear of death. He has overcome my fear of tomorrow. He has overcome all these fears in my life. The shepherd of my soul has guided me through. And though they may look scary, the reality is he's bigger than all of that. And I can entrust my life to him with his rod and his staff. They comfort me. And I shall dwell, as long as I live on this earth, I shall dwell in the house of the Lord. And again, I'll say this, I'm not naive to the fact that we have ways of looking at this that depict afterlife. What I'm just saying is, look through the eyes of David. He's saying, life is good when you're the sheep of the master shepherd. And you can thrive and you can do well in this life. And you can enjoy this life right here and now. But let's discipline ourselves to that point to get beyond the fears. And I'd ask you to take a moment, even as the ladies come and take us into a time of commitment. As the music begins, you can write these things down on the back side of your card. Consider what fears you have allowed inside. And then ask yourself, maybe through the outline of this message, why? Where did the discipline go awry? At what point did my remembrances fail? Because it's time for me to get back to that place that I can look the fearsome things in the face and say, I will fear no danger. Allow him to comfort us today. And even as this song is going to call us to the altar, you could just put the next slide up there, Sam. We're not going to the words. Just want you to be thoughtful. And even as it's calling you to the altar, come to the altar. Allow him to do a work in us today. Allow him to be the faithful shepherd that he wants. Lay your cards down here as an offering, a sacrifice of joy before the Lord. Let us as a congregation enjoy the Lord together in this way. Commit yourself to these joys and these disciplines, these remembrances. Let him do a work continually in us.